Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Pack your bags, start the car, and get on the road. It's time to go across the country, 2 minutes at a time, for the biggest stories of the day, where they're happening.
Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Indianapolis, Indiana.
Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Cleveland, Ohio.
Boston, Mass.
Miami, Florida.
It's the 2 Minute Drill on the program.
Yes, indeed. The second half of the program begins right now around the country, 2 minutes at a time, talking to the people covering the stories where they are happening. We call it the 2 Minute Drill. We do it every Monday and Friday at 4 o'clock. We are on the road today, the Jim Beam Bourbon Tour. And I'm going to tell you, the Jim Beam Red Stag, it's like a cherry flavor. It's my new favorite. Did you try it, Rudy? Oh, you got to try it. It's my new favorite. I do like the honey as well. They've got all the great flavors you can try right here. Come in here and sample it for free. Have yourself a bottle of whichever one you want when you buy some. You also get one of these great Jim Beam Stadium bags here. So they've got all the flavors. The lovely ladies will be happy to help you out sampling whichever flavor you like. Honey, vanilla, red stag, peach, apple, Jim Beam Fire. They are great, great flavors. And I'll tell you what, I am a big fan. The red stag is going to be going home with me tonight. So come on out here. We're on the northeast corner of North Oak Trafficway and Berry Road in Gladstone, 500 Northeast Berry Road, if you want to GPS it, at the Price Chopper. So come on in and get stocked up for the weekend. Let's start things off in the nation's capital. Chris Russell, 106.7 The Fan in Washington, D.C. Chris, how are you, sir?
Hey, Sarin. I'll gladly take some if you want to show up in the nation's capital. Yeah. I think we're going to need it. We got a lot of low night there.
You do, man. I'm going to tell you, I remember the back-to-back years the Royals were in the World Series, and that whole run through the playoffs, it was like having, like, you know, 5 or 6 Friday and Saturday nights when you were in college every single week. Everybody was out all the time. We all talked about how exhausted we were afterwards, and that's where you're going to be now with that. And since it's been since 1933 that a D.C. team was in the World Series, how ridiculous is that town about the Nationals?
Yeah, I mean, right now, today, it's semi-calm. You know, of course, Tuesday night, Wednesday was absolutely bonkers. And, you know, for that matter, Monday, and, you know, after they took the first two in St. Louis, it was, you know, it was excited, but it was just absolutely nuts on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday around here. It'll ratchet up, of course. Now, games 1 and 2 will be likely in Houston, but either way, on the road. So until a week from tonight, it'll be, in terms of the party atmosphere and the ballpark atmosphere, that'll be kind of calm until a week from tonight. But those 3 games next Friday, Saturday, and if necessary, assuming next Sunday, will be an absolute just wild party. D.C. is an event sports town. There's many sports towns like this. We come out for the biggest event, and we let it go, and we have a good time. And usually, things turn up roses for us, but it is an absolute event town, and they will totally embrace the World Series and not be able to get enough of it. And they've done a good, very good job so far in this postseason. They're not great in the regular season. I got to be honest. They're not great in the regular season, but they're really, 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 really good around here in the postseason of every sport.
When did you believe that this was a team that could be a world champion? Do you believe it right now? Do you think they can go all the way? And when did everybody get on board that this was? Because they've been able to get to the postseason but haven't been able to push through. So when did people get on board with this team?
Yeah, so, you know, they were awful to start, 12 games under 500, then the best team in baseball the rest of the way. And they had a little slip-up, say, from Labor Day to for about a week and a half, maybe 2 weeks after that. And then they kicked it up another notch, and they kicked it up another gear. And that's when you started to feel, okay, this team is primed and ready because they have the starting pitching. They can use their starting pitchers 1 through 4 to compensate for some of the problems in the bullpen. But the bullpen is not as bad as it was. And then they've got these great young hitters. And not that Rendon is super young, but Juan Soto is, and Trey Turner is. And they've got a nice mix of veterans. They've got good pop. They've got good speed. They have been able to get a bunch of two-out hits. They're never done until you count them out and get that 27th out. So just, I would say, you know, maybe a week or so before the end of the regular season, maybe a couple of days before the regular season, you're like, okay, this team is good enough to make a strong run here. Did anybody think they were going to get past the Dodgers? Probably not, including myself, but I knew they would give the Dodgers a run, and they did more than that.
All right, a couple other points real quick here. Bradley Beal gets the extension. The Nationals not going the tank route. Is this the right move? Is this a team that can get back into the postseason this year? Or are they making a mistake in not trading him off and trying to go for top lottery picks?
Yeah, I personally think that they did the right thing here because they'll get Wall back, John Wall, either at the very end of this year or if they're still in playoff contention or fresh for the next year, right? To me, you have to have somebody to build on, somebody to lean on, and there are going to be some lead nights. But the new GM, Tommy Shepard, who's been here and but just has done things dramatically different to take over, he's got this franchise finally pointed in the right direction. He's got people believing that the Wizards can be feisty and competitive in a wide-open East. So, yes, I think this is a good move. The contract now sync up. He and John Wall together because he's got 2 years on this extension, plus an option, a player option here. So, again, they sync up nicely, and this signifies to everyone, hey, the Wizards still, you can come here and we can win.
All right, Jay Gruden out as the Redskins head coach. Who should be the next head coach? Who will be the next head coach?
So I think Bill Callahan right now, the interim head coach, is a strong favorite if Bruce Allen stays in charge. And that's a big if. He's a Bruce Allen guy. Dan Snyder likes him as well because Bruce Allen likes him. So you have that. Kevin O'Connell is their first-year offensive coordinator. I certainly think he will get some consideration. Eric Bieniemy, who you guys know well, I think gets some consideration. There was a big Jason Watkins war story about Mike Tomlin. I don't see how they get Mike Tomlin out of Pittsburgh, but I guess if Mike Tomlin gets fired, certainly that would make the sense. My guess is, my hunch, is they go Callahan and or Kevin O'Connell, one of those two, and stay in-house.
Chris Russell in D.C., great stuff, buddy. Enjoy that World Series.
Thanks, pal. Good to hear you on our station as well earlier today.
Scott Seidenberg, NBC Sports Radio in New York, New York. Scott, how are you, sir?
I'm doing better than the Yanks.
Yeah, down 3-1. How much hope is there?
Well, you know, it's like Kevin Millar said in 2004 when the Red Sox came back to beat the Yankees. Just win tonight, and then you go ahead and you take your chances in the next game, and anything can happen in the Game 7. So if the Yankees can somehow win this game against Verlander tonight, force the series to go back to a Houston for a Game 6, you like the Yankees' chances in a Game 6, which is likely going to feature a bullpen game. And then I know that it's Garrett Cole staring in your face in Game 7, but anything can happen in a Game 7. But it all starts with tonight because you don't win, the season's over, and the Astros are going to the World Series.
Is anybody lamenting not making more moves? They did a nice job of kind of holding their holding themselves. They got DJ LeMahieu, which has been a great move, maybe one of the best moves that anybody made in the offseason when you consider what they got him for and how productive he was. But, you know, everyone kind of thought the Yankees were going to be splashing money around. They didn't do it. Is anybody being critical of them for not doing more in the offseason or at the deadline?
Yeah, Yankees fans and just baseball fans in general are just screaming at how come the Yankees did not get a stud starting pitcher at the trade deadline. And my argument to everybody who says that is pitching, first of all, is not the reason why the Yankees are losing 3-1. The Astros have scored 15 runs in this series. 8 of them came in last night's game. The Yankees have only scored 6 since that 7-run outburst in Game 1. Hitting has been the reason why the Yankees are down 3-1. Do you realize that the Yankees are 4-27 in this series with runners in scoring position? They've stranded 33 base runners. A stud starting pitcher is not fixing that for you. The pitching has actually been fine for the Yankees. And besides the fact, there was no one to get at the deadline. Zach Greinke was not going to waive his no-trade clause. He did not want to pitch in the Bronx. The price for Marcus Stroman would have been Gleyber Torres, and Brian Cashman was not going to trade Gleyber Torres to Toronto just to bring back Marcus Stroman on a rental. And Marcus Stroman, let's face it, would not have gotten a start in this series. Maybe instead of a bullpen game, you would have started Stroman, but you're not starting him over Paxton. You're not starting him over Severino. And you're not starting him over Masahiro Tanaka. So where was the stud starting pitcher that all these fans were going to be clamoring for? Where would they have made a difference in this series? And my argument is they wouldn't have.
You mentioned Gerrit Cole. He could be available this offseason. Steven Strasburg could opt out. Do you expect him to spend big this offseason?
Absolutely. And keep in mind, though, Brian Cashman did not want to go the extra year with Patrick Corbin. And I actually commended him for that, because you don't want to lock up a guy into his 30s and paying him that much money. But Gerrit Cole, a guy like that, does not come around often. Let's face it, 29 years old in the prime of his career, he is going to get the largest contract for a pitcher in baseball history, right? We're talking about higher than, what did Kershaw get, 35 a year? This guy's going to get 40. You know, Gerrit Cole's worth it. So I expect the Yankees to be suitors for Cole. And, yes, if Strasburg does opt out, I expect them to be suitors for Strasburg. And I also expect them to be suitors for other guys that teams are going to let go of, like perhaps it's a Zach Wheeler for the Mets, who they might not sign. That could be a nice addition to the Yankee rotation. But I fully expect them to go after Cole and Strasburg, the two biggest names on the pitching market this offseason.
All right, I don't think anybody is talking about the Giants winning the Super Bowl, but they're just one game out. Cardinals at home at the Lions, Cowboys at home at the Jets. Should people be talking about the Giants maybe working their way into that picture for the NFC East?
No. they should just be talking about them in terms of growing from week to week and letting Daniel Jones show you that he really is the future of this franchise. If they check off all the boxes this season, which is showing positive signs of growth and that you have your answer at the quarterback position, this is going to be a successful season. It doesn't matter what their record is. The Giants had zero expectations to compete this year, so anything above the 5-win mark is going to be considered a successful season for them. It's all about Daniel Jones, in my opinion, though. Making sure that he is, in fact, your franchise quarterback is the number one thing, because you drafted the guy 6th overall. You have to see it, because you don't want to have a situation where you're the Arizona Cardinals drafting a quarterback back-to-back years in the first round. So as long as the Giants can find out that Daniel Jones is their guy and he shows positive signs of growth and is ready to go into next season as a potential contender in the NFC, then yes, I think this is a good season for the Giants. But don't talk about playoffs right now.
Scott Seidenberg, we won't do it, buddy. We appreciate it, man. Have yourself a great weekend.
Thanks. Go Yanks.
To the arms of Florida.
It's Ryan Green, 1010 XL in Jacksonville, Florida. Ryan, how are you, sir?
Saran, I'm good, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Jalen Ramsey ultimately gets sent to the Rams. Two firsts and a fourth-round pick. I think that's an amazing haul. I get it. The owner tried to get it done, but if he couldn't get it done, you can't ask for more than that. What's the reaction in Jacksonville?
The reaction, it was split at first, and I think fans now realize what Jalen Ramsey was doing. Obviously, he was faking the back injury. He didn't want to be here any longer. Saran, it basically boils down to that. And when a guy doesn't want to be here, you know, and you can get two first-round picks for him, I think the Jaguars did as well as they could do. And look, a first-rounder in 2020, a first-rounder in 2021, I'm fine with that. Jalen Ramsey was a headache, was a distraction. And to be honest with you, since Tuesday that he's been traded, this has been kind of the most relaxing week, if you will, in that Jaguar locker room, now that that nuisance known as Jalen Ramsey is now on the West Coast.
All right, and so what is the big-picture plan for where they go? They pick up the two firsts in each of the next 2 years, another fourth-round pick. Are they in full-blown rebuild mode, or do they think that they're still in the mix in the AFC South?
Well, truthfully, it's kind of a little bit of both. I mean, Saran, they got some good veteran players this year, but they've started 5 rookies so far this season. They're starting, right tackle is a rookie. They're bringing in a starting tight end this week that's a rookie. They're starting Josh Allen, their first-round pick, a rookie defensive end. You combine that now with 4 first-round picks over the next 2 years. But they still do have Calais Campbell. They still do have A.J. Boye and Marcel Darius. So it's kind of a little bit of both right now, but I think more on the rebuilding side. We'll see what happens. But the bottom line is the Jaguars have two very winnable games the next 2 weeks. They should be 4-4 when they go to London to play Houston, and they're not closing the book on this 2019 season yet, no question about it.
Update us on where they go with the quarterback when Nick Foles is healthy.
Well, Doug Marrone actually today said Nick Foles is going to come back to practice next week. Now, I don't think there's any chance of him coming back until after the bye week, which would be early to mid-November. But we'll see. We'll see what Gardner Minshew does Sunday against Cincinnati. We'll see what Gardner Minshew does next week against the New York Jets. And that'll weigh heavily as to what the Jaguars do. If the Jaguars are 5-4, you know, somewhere in that ballpark, I don't know how you take the rookie out of the lineup. If the Jaguars are worse off than that, well, then at that point, maybe you put Nick Foles back in. But regardless of what happens, Seren, it's going to be a lot of conversation here in Jacksonville, that's for sure.
All right, I actually thought Florida, in my opinion, proved their strength even more so by going to LSU. I know it ends up being 14 when it's all said and done, but really for 3.5 quarters they were trading scores with LSU at their place coming off beating Auburn. I mean, I think you could have seen a huge letdown there, but it didn't happen. So I was really impressed with Dan Mullen and his bunch, yet they're laying only 5.5 at South Carolina. I know South Carolina won at Georgia, but that's a scary number for me if I'm a Florida fan. What do you expect this week?
Well, I mean, South Carolina was beating Florida by 17 at halftime last year, and Florida had to come storming back in the second half to win that game. Like you said, South Carolina, Sorens are going to be feeling very good about the, where they are after the Georgia game. There's supposed to be some weather in Columbia. It's supposed to be a lot of weather, a lot of wind, a lot of rain. It might be a slop fest tomorrow at noon Eastern time between the Gators and the Gamecocks. This is a survive and advance game, Seren. I don't care if it's 3-2, 50-49, whatever it is. Florida just needs to win tomorrow. It can be as ugly as they want it to be, can pretty as they want it to be. They need to get a W. They have a bye week next week, and that would set up a huge match with Georgia, probably for the SEC East title. Again, survive and advance tomorrow for the Gators is all they're trying to do.
And they get an extra week off before the world's biggest cocktail party there in Jacksonville against Georgia. And that's the game everyone's talking about, except here where we live and in the state of Missouri, where Missouri is actually in first place in that division. I'm curious, how much do Florida and Georgia fans pay attention to, and are they even at all concerned about the fact that the Missouri Tigers are undefeated in the league right now?
Oh, we've certainly talked about it. I mean, Kelly Bryant adds to that, but look, Saran, every time Florida goes to Columbia, Missouri, they get boat raced. I mean, Florida has not won a game in Columbia, Missouri, I believe, in the last three tries, two of which Missouri has just flat out ran them out of the stadium. Missouri came down to Gainesville last year and destroyed Florida on homecoming. Believe me, the Gators are very much aware of the Missouri Tigers because they have not played very well against Missouri, really, since the Tigers entered the SEC.
All right, great stuff. Ryan Green, 1010XL in Jacksonville, Florida. Always appreciate the time, buddy. Have yourself a great weekend.
Saran, you too, my friend. Take
it. It's raining in Baltimore.
Glenn Clark Radio in Baltimore, Maryland is next. Glenn, how are you, buddy?
Saran Petro, it is great to chat with you, sir.
It is my pleasure, my friend, and it's now your pleasure to enjoy Marcus Peters. I look forward to hearing the great tales of covering that young man in your locker room. Tell me, first of all, the reaction from the fans about getting Marcus Peters in a trade.
Look, the fans think the Ravens pulled off a coup. You know, obviously, Marcus Peters, given his past success and clearly what you're alluding to in Kansas City, on the field, the fact that you only had to give up a linebacker that, while, yes, was a mid-round pick a year ago, was a player that, frankly, was not even going to be active when Patrick Onwuasa was healthy again. And you gave up a fifth-round pick. That's just almost nothing. So for the Ravens to get somebody that can step in and presumably play immediately and make an impact for almost nothing, the fan base is excited about it. I think the real question is, are the Ravens done now, or are they still looking to try to do something impact-wise, a pass rush? Because if this is it, this was not their biggest problem. They've dealt with a lot of injuries in the secondary, but the pass rush is non-existent. They have none. And so if they can't solve that, then it probably won't matter that they went out and got Marcus Peters. So you know, I think it's a mix. From the fan base, they're excited. I think for the rest of us, it's a, okay, sure, yeah, no reason not to do this. But what are you doing about the pass rush? Because that's the problem.
Toughest stretch of the season, schedule-wise, right? At Seattle,
yeah.
Then coming home to the Patriots. But after that, and with a two-game lead, confidence is really high that they're going to, you know, 10-6 will probably get it done in the North, right?
Well, there's an argument that 8-8 might get it done in the North at this point. So random and Pittsburgh will get Mason Rudolph back. But in fairness, the Browns' schedule really eases up, and so I think they'll start stockpiling some wins as the season goes along. But it's a bad division. The Ravens have to prove who they are. It's one thing for them to be a team that can compete and win this division. That's all well and good. Are they really a threat to go do something? Clearly, you know, last night when Patrick Mahomes got hurt, everybody else in the AFC was thinking to themselves, okay, this could be a different conference at this point. We'll see. I mean, we're not – I don't know yet. They have looked really good against bad teams. They have not looked so good when they played even the Browns this season. So they still have to prove who they are, these barometer types of games. We know what happened when we went down to Kansas City. We'll see. On Sunday they go to Seattle. That's a huge test and not something that – right now we can expect the Ravens to handle very well. But if they can win a game or two like this, then I think we can start sort of recalibrating expectations for this team moving forward and whether or not they're really a threat to win the AFC.
Lamar Thomas is returning to play his old team in the Seahawks. The Chiefs were said to be really interested in Lamar Thomas as well. What's been the feeling of what he's been able to give the Ravens this year?
So I kind of a little disappointment, to be honest with you, with Earl Thomas. It's a you know, he was brought in to be a playmaker. He has one interception so far, another that, you know, was erased due to a penalty. He's been okay. He got into a fight with Brandon Williams, who's one of the more respected veterans, after the Browns game a couple weeks ago because he was mad that Brandon Williams didn't play due to injury. It's a mix of weird. His intensity is welcomed in Baltimore. People sort of like that. But he's kind of come in like a bull in a china shop and hasn't really backed that up with consistent playmaking on the field. It's not like he's playing poorly or he's showing that he's, you know, over the hill, but he was paid a lot of money to come in and be a true difference maker. And so far, he's kind of just been a guy. I think there's a lot of people that are hoping that getting back to Seattle, of course, we all remember the final image of him when he got hurt and, you know, he gave the double middle finger coming off the field. I think there's a lot of people that are hoping that this could be a moment that really gets him going as he goes back to Seattle this year to be the guy that he was more expected to be with the Ravens.
All right. Do you think the Ravens are a Super Bowl contender?
Not yet, no. I mean, they just haven't played anybody and played well enough against anybody who's any good for me to think that, Saran. Obviously, I reserve the right to change my mind, but at the moment,
sure.
No, I have nothing evidence-wise that suggests that. Their defense just isn't good enough right now, and they have such a lack of playmakers. You know, Marquise Brown, who you guys know in Big 12 country, he's going to be out this Sunday. They have nothing at wide receiver without Marquise Brown. They have, you know, Willie Snead. Miles Boykin's done nothing, their third-round pick out of Notre Dame. Look, Lamar Jackson's played well. The run game is very good. Mark Andrews has been unbelievable as a tight end. But they just don't quite have enough yet for me to believe that they're that team.
All right, we'll see how it goes. Next two games, like I said, and as you know, obviously, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but at Seattle and versus New England, we'll know a lot more about them.
Yeah, we'll talk Clark again then, Saran. They win those two games, I'm calling you, and I'm saying I changed my mind, bud.
Yeah, that's right. Then you're going to win it all. Glenn Clark in Baltimore, man. Great stuff. You're the man. We appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Saran, always appreciate it, pal.
Feel good.
Local talk plus national headlines from the people who are there. The 2-Minute Drill on the program with Saran Petro on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
He was there for Montana Magic at Arrowhead.
Back to pass, Montana. Cocks his arm. Looks right. No one there. Looks left. Throws in the end zone. Touchdown! Joe Montana has done it again!
He was there for the drought breaker in Houston.
Niall Davis starts the playoffs with a bang! 106 yards! Touchdown, Chiefs!
And he was there for everything in between.
And it's crazy. This is terrible. This is one of the worst catastrophes in the world. It's a terrific grace, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, the humanity.
No one knows the Chiefs better. He's Adam Teicher of ESPN on the program.
We are on the road right now in the Northland, 500 Northeast Berry Road, at the Price Chopper. That's where you can come find us, northeast corner of North Oak Trafficway and Berry Road. It's the Jim Beam Bourbon Tour. You can take advantage of some free samples of all the wonderful flavors. Check out the Jim Beam Red Stag. It's got a great flavor. It's the black cherry flavor. It's wonderful. They've got them all for you to sample, the Red Stag, vanilla, honey. You can check out the peach, the apple, the Jim Beam Fire. It's all right here. Let's get a little taste. You can grab it right now. It comes with a big, or not big, but the security bag, the clear bag you take through the Chiefs with the cool Jim Beam logo. You can get that with it. Come stock up right now. The Jim Beam ladies will be happy to give you a sample. Even mix it up if you want to try it with some of the mixers. They've got those here as well. It's the Jim Beam Bourbon Tour. Stock up on the world's number one bourbon, the official bourbon of the Kansas City Royals, and the bourbon that is sitting on my counter at home at my bar. It is absolutely fantastic. You can grab some of the black extra aged as well. Great, great flavor there for you. Stock up on all the flavors right now here at Price Chopper, 500 Northeast Berry Road. And, of course, when you're at the Chiefs game, after hearing our man Adam Teicher, we're going to talk to you here in a second, you can check out the Jim Beam Stillhouse Bar. It's right next to the Hall of Fame at Arrowhead. Get the great, refreshing Jim Beam Peach Lemonade there. Take advantage of it. Signing people up to win a Yeti cooler. I've had a lot of people sign up, but not too many, so you got a great chance to come win this beautiful Yeti cooler. It's a backpack cooler, perfect for tailgating, best cooler in the world. We're going to draw a name. All we need is a name and a number. You're not going to get a bunch of emails, so what the heck? Got nothing to lose. You can only win here with our friends from Jim Beam as we are in the Northland. So come on out, all the Northlanders. We've said hello to a lot of folks here today. I'd like to say hello to a lot more. We're at the northeast corner of North Oak and Berry Road at the Price Chopper. It's the Jim Beam Bourbon Tour. We talked to a man who I know I would appreciate a fine bourbon. That's Adam Teicher from ESPN. He's with us on our Sprint guest line. Adam, how are you, sir?
Good, Saran. How are you doing today?
I'm doing very good. Your reaction to what we saw yesterday. Let's start with Patrick Mahomes going down. All accounts coming from everybody but the Kansas City Chiefs are that they averted major disaster. What's your reaction?
And now it's about holding on until he comes back, whenever that might be, probably 3-4 weeks. So, if the Chiefs can get to their bye, winning, if they can win three of these next four, which may be a tall order without him, but if they can get three of the next four, boy, what great shape they're going to be in. They'll be, 8-3 and heading down the stretch with Pat Mahomes coming back. So, that I think has to be the goal for the Chiefs right now. Try to find a way to win three of these next four and welcome him back into the lineup maybe after the bye.
Even though, because of the way the schedule's worked out, the Raiders having already had a bye and the Chiefs playing on Thursday, they're two games up in the win column. They're tied in the loss column with the Raiders. The Raiders do have to go play Green Bay, so that's a tough one for them on Sunday. Do you think it's going to take 3-1, or will 2-2 be good enough to keep them in first place out in front of the Raiders?
Yeah, I think 2-2 will probably do it because I think we all think the Raiders are going to lose this Sunday. So, I think 2-2 will do it. But boy, 3-1, then you're still in play for the first round bye and all that stuff. So there's stuff to be playing for here besides the AFC West Championship. So I think 3-1 should be the goal. Although I you're right. I mean, if worse comes to worse, you take 2-2 for sure.
Did Andy Reid make a mistake in calling a quarterback sneak for that play, as many people have asserted?
Yeah, I don't think so. That's not my theory here. He had a bum ankle, but that had nothing to do with the injury. If you're going to put the guy out there, you're going to play him and do what you need to do. I'm not a big quarterback sneak guy in general. I think the running back has all the momentum. I think that's, you have better odds that way. But I don't have a problem with what he did. I mean, this stuff's going to happen. You got to play the game. And, if he had a knee problem and hurt and made it worse by that play, then maybe you say, okay, but the ankle had nothing to do with this. So, I'm okay with what he did there. They're trying to win a game and got to do what he's got to do.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. Although I am a quarterback sneak guy, I love the play call. I thought it was the right play call. It just didn't work out. Like, knowing what happened, yes, I would call something else. I love what Jason Anderson said earlier today. He goes, if I'd have known he was going to get hurt, I'd have punted. Just kicked it right out of the end zone because of the big picture part of it. But, you know, that's a little bit different. So, you know, I think you got to do what it takes to win the game, and going for it there, the quarterback sneak is the way to go. Tom Brady's done it time and time again. And it does bring up the fact that they did try to run it three times after that, ended up having to settle for a field goal, and they're still not really running the ball well. I know they got away with it here because of a great defensive effort on that side of the ball, but how concerning is it that they're still, other than the 10 or 12 carries they gave the ball, 12 this game, to LeSean McCoy, they're still not running the ball that effectively? How concerned are you about that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a factor, and they're going to need it more. I mean, obviously, they're going to need it more these next three or four games without Mahomes than they would have otherwise. So, yeah, I think that's a factor. I mean, they need to figure that out and get that done because, you know, you don't run to win the game, but you certainly take the pressure with a good running game, a reliable running game. You take the pressure off your quarterback. That's something the Chiefs really need to do more than ever now. So, they need to figure that out and get that done and run the ball better than they have, for sure.
Did they run it enough?
I was okay with what they did last night. I felt like they just hadn't done it at all. They just never even gave it a whiff in against Indianapolis and against Houston, and they really needed to make some sort of commitment to it. And I thought last night was fine. I was okay with that. You know, the first drive, you know, the Broncos had gone down and scored, and then the Chiefs came right back and I believe it was an 8-play drive and 5 passes, but 3 runs, but they were effective. Ran the ball a couple on times on first down on that drive and were able to get in a positive down and distance. I mean, that's one of the things that the running game does for you. It helps get you in the rhythm. You know, if you can get 4 yards on first down, then you've made your job a lot easier. And then the first downs start piling up, and you've all of a sudden you're in rhythm. So there's just too many benefits from a reliable running game to just say, we're not going to even bother. So I think they took a step at least in that direction last night.
We're talking to Adam Teicher. He's with us on our Sprint Guest Line, brought to you by our friends at E. Edwards Workwear. You can check them out online at eeworkwear.com. Now open their location at 3520 South Nolan Road in Independence. Everything you need to gear up as the weather is turning cold. I know I'm going to be out late tonight, and I've got my E. Edwards gloves and my E. Edwards Carhartt pullover, which is absolutely a must if you're working or playing outside. You can get all your great workwear at E. Edwards Workwear, eeworkwear.com, to find the location nearest to you. The defense would have been the story if not for Patrick Mahomes' injury last night. More about them or more about the Broncos' offense?
I'm inclined to think it was more about the Broncos offense. I mean, I knew they weren't very good, but, you know, the Broncos aren't very good. I mean, they're a 5-11 or maybe a 6-10 team, but they were so bad last night. I mean, that was like the Romeo Crennella era Chiefs. I mean, that's how bad they were last night, and they couldn't do anything right. That offensive line is a mess. Joe Flacco looks like he's washed up. It was a mess. So, let's see it sustained from the Chiefs before I'm going to say this thing is fixed and, they're where they need to be. You know, the challenge is certainly to be bigger against the Packers. But, hey, credit to them. They sort of controlled the game at a point where the Chiefs needed the defense to control the game. I mean, that was exactly what the Chiefs needed last night when all this quarterback drama was going on. They were able to not only hold the Broncos off, but score a defensive touchdown to give Matt Moore some breathing room and take some pressure off him. So, take no credit away from the Chiefs. They did a marvelous job last night. But before I'm going to buy in, I want to see this kind of thing happen again.
How much of it's the fact that they had a stationary quarterback? I mean, they looked pretty good against Derek Carr. They knew where he was going to be. The only stationary quarterback that kind of got to him was – was Matt Stafford and the Lions. Early on, yeah, Nick Foles did throw a big touchdown. But, you know, when they know where the guy's at, and listen, the next four that they all think they're going to have to play without Patrick Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers can run a little, but not as much as he used to. Kirk Cousins isn't a threat to run. If Ryan Tannehill's going to be starting in Tennessee, he's not really a threat to run. Phillip Rivers sure as hell ain't going to run after that. Derek Carr, Tom Brady, back for more. Joe Flacco or whoever they want to throw out there next by that point. Maybe Mitchell Trubisky if he's going to be the guy with the Bears. And then Phillip Rivers again. How much of it was the elusiveness of the three of the four quarterbacks they played here before this?
Yeah, no, I think that was a factor. You know, Steve Spagnuolo was talking about that last week. He sort of said that one thing that was in their favor going into the Denver game was that you know, Joe Flacco was not like Lamar Jackson or Jacoby Brissett or certainly not Deshaun Watson. So, you know, he was you could sort of read between the lines and feel like he was looking forward to playing against a quarterback who's more of a pocket guy who wasn't going to really move away efficiently from trouble. So you sort of thought maybe, okay, Chiefs are coming after Flacco Thursday night, and sure enough they did, and they were really effective with it, and they took advantage of some real mismatches with that Bronco offensive line. So credit to Steve Spagnuolo. He saw weakness there and picked on it. And you're right. I mean, you know, there are no more Lamar Jacksons on the schedule for the Chiefs. So, you know, things look pretty good for them in that regard. And that's something maybe that'll make their job a lot easier going forward here.
I've been pretty critical of Derek Nnadi. I don't think he's played well until last night. And he seemed to play at an entirely different level than certainly we've seen him play this year. What got into Derek Nnadi last night? I mean, I love seeing it. He's a nice kid. I've always enjoyed talking to him, but man, he'd been really manhandled by the Colts and Texans. What got into him last night?
Yeah, you're right. I have no explanation for it. You know, the matchup maybe was better, but you know, the Chiefs had a number of guys playing well last night. You know, it was him. You know, the linebackers, maybe the best game of the year. Anthony Hitchens and Reggie Ragland. So, you know, there were a number of guys who were getting the job done last night. And all you can really point to is matchups. And maybe, you know, those were just across the board, just in the Chiefs' favor. But, you know, hey, certainly encouraging on defense. I'm not pinning this all on a weak opponent. I mean, you know, maybe the Chiefs have figured some things out. But I'll wait to make that determination until I see it again.
Well, that's the one thing they do have is this was just their seventh game with a lot of the different pieces we mentioned, you know, seven or eight frontline guys changed out in that defense, new scheme, new coordinator. I mean, that's the reason to be optimistic, right, that this is just them starting to get what it is the defense is supposed to do.
Yeah, you knew they weren't going to be great right off the bat, and they weren't. You know, it was so much new. I think that maybe was an underestimated factor in what the Chiefs were trying to do on defense. But, you know, hey, at some point you are what you are. And, you know, Steve Spagnuolo, I loved his honesty last week. He sort of acknowledged that Chiefs should be more advanced than they had been defensively. So, you know, if this is, you know, really an indication of a step forward, then the Chiefs have a lot to look forward to. I think this four-game stretch or whatever it is without Pat Mahomes could go, you know, as well as they'd hope. If they can, if this is who the Chiefs really are, if this the way they played last night was genuine, but you know, if they're going to go back to the missed tackles and getting blown off the line of scrimmage and you know, all that stuff, and allow the opponent to have the ball the whole game, then this is going to be a rough stretch for the Chiefs for sure.
They've got some extra time before they play on Sunday night, a week from Sunday night against the Green Bay Packers. Any thoughts on or any idea as to whether or not they'll be getting anybody back that's been hurt?
Yeah, that's a good question. I still think Eric Fisher's probably another game or two away. Maybe Andrew Wiley, maybe that's a guy you look at to come back. He's possible. I think Sammy Watkins is a definite possibility there. I think it I'd be surprised at this point if Watkins didn't play against the Packers. So, you know, I think the thing is looking up. Chris Jones might be a little bit away, time away too. So, but you know, this 10-day stretch really looks good for the Chiefs. They'll probably put this one to good use.
All right, we're talking to Adam Teicher. He is our Chiefs insider. You hear him all throughout the day here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Read his work at ESPN.com. It's time for our Final Four, Adam. It is brought to you by the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute, Kansas City's first and only hospital. It's dedicated exclusively to orthopedics, even an ortho-urgent care that's open 7 days a week for treating things like high school football injuries. If you've got an injury like what happened with Patrick Mahomes last night, go see him at the Kansas City Orthopedic Institute. You can call him at 913-319-7633. Find him online at kcoi.com. Adam, I'll start you with this. What are you feeling the Chiefs' final record will be?
Final record. I'm going to go with 11-5. So that means they go 6-3 the rest of the way.
All right. You know, we're here as part of the Jim Beam Bourbon Tour. I don't know if you're aware of this, but that's the world's number one bourbon, by the way. So I'm curious, what's the most shots you've ever had in a night?
Oh, I probably lost count at some point. I'm going to go with... I'll go with under 10. Maybe give me an 8. I'm a solid 8 guy right there.
I think you're a stone-cold liar. I think you're an absolute
liar. That's probably too high, but it's been a lot of years. So that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
That's fine. You're at least a hell of a lot more honest than Glauber's crap, whatever he was peddling back there. All right, better quarterback right now, right this moment, better quarterback or with practice and whatnot, you know what I mean. Better quarterback, yeah. Matt Moore or Colin Kaepernick?
I'll take Colin Kaepernick.
Okay. Don't
hold your breath on that one.
Yeah, really? Okay. All right. What's the subject we're going to broach next hour? Why not, right? We haven't talked about it for a while. Everyone's going to want to talk about it. I can't wait to see the eye rolls. All right, and finally and most importantly, last time you snuck in booze, whether you were sneaking into the movie theater or maybe into a college football game, I don't know, maybe to a holiday affair because you can't deal with the in-laws. You tell me, last time you snuck it in, I know you've done it.
It was a Detroit tie. I don't know if this was the last time, but I remember when I was in college, we went to a Tigers game and snuck some in and got kicked out. That's why I remember it. We got caught and got kicked out. So that's probably not the most recent time, but that's a memorable time.
That is absolutely fantastic. Adam Teicher, you absolute delinquent. I love it.
There you go. That's
fantastic. That's great. All right, Adam. Great stuff as always, buddy. We appreciate
stuff,
it. We'll talk to you again next week, man.
All right, sir, man. We'll talk to you later.
All right, Adam Teicher does a great job covering the Chiefs. Make sure you check out his work at ESPN.com. You can come check out the Jim Beam Bourbon. Listen, you're off work. Come on by. You're getting everything for the weekend here at the Price Chopper at the northeast corner of North Oak and Berry Road. Well, come on in and sample all the wonderful flavors of Jim Beam. You can try them all. Peach, apple. They got the Jim Beam Fire, honey, vanilla, red stag. I love the red stag. I'd never had that before. That is absolutely fantastic. Come check it out. It's the number one bourbon in the world, for crying out loud. Of course, you can check it out next time you're at Arrowhead Stadium a week from Sunday. If you're going out to the Chiefs and Packers, make sure you get over to the Jim Beam Stillhouse Bar. It's right next to the Hall of Fame at Arrowhead Stadium. You can check out like a little Jim Beam peach lemonade if you'd like. Remember, always drink smart and responsibly, and come on out and check it out and stock up on your Jim Beam here at the Price Chopper, 500 Northeast Berry Road.
The Program with Seren Petro, weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, wrapping up hour number 3. When we come back, we are going to take your phone calls. We've had a busy day. You know, we're not used to having a Chiefs post game on a Friday. And I'll tell you what, Kevin Harlan is running ragged. He's got NBA and NFL. And so we said he was going to try to squeeze us in for a few minutes. We said, you know what, Kevin? Just do what you got to do, man. You just did a game last night. Got two more games to prep for. Get to work. So we're going to take your phone calls coming up next. If you haven't had a chance to react about the Kansas City Chiefs, Sean has requested that you not complain about the play call of the quarterback sneak or his head will blow up. So I don't want to see his head explode by any stretch of the imagination. But we'll take your phone calls next. You can grab a phone line right now at 913-3810-810. I'm on the Jim Beam Bourbon Tour, and it's a phenomenal tour. Come try all the wonderful flavors of Jim Beam Bourbon, the world's number one bourbon. They got some great, great flavors. Come check it out. The Red Stag is maybe my new favorite, Vanilla Honey. Come on out. It's a Jim Beam Bourbon Tour at Price Chopper, 500 Northeast Perry Road.
Joe's Kansas City Barbecue in Olathe, Leawood, and the original in the gas station at 47th and Mission.
All right, before last night, who was the Chiefs' starting quarterback the last time they won it by at least 24 points at Denver? Brought to you by Joe's Kansas City Barbecue.